It's like so many people ask like the same questions and the same, like, how did you get here? And tell us about this. And it's like, well, I can tell you about that. But for me to tell you about this, we got to talk about this, like this, you know, not necessarily even struggle, but like you said, the psychology. And so many people, especially in the U.S., like think that talking about money is like such a bad thing. And it's like, well, yeah, but you probably don't have any either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I do not take meetings at Starbucks, right? Like, I've never seen anybody close a $1 million deal at Starbucks.
You're listening to Business Banter Podcast live from wherever Conrad's yerba mate addiction takes us to. The only show with truly unfiltered behind-the-scenes business talk. You're here, my dear listener, as an entrepreneur who's craving knowledge and advice. But whichever way you go, you either fall asleep or your bullshit detector goes off. Besides raw business talk and interviews with experts, you can expect us to spice things up a bit and throw in a touch of banter into the podcasting blender. Real everyman's talk on topics ranging from China taking over the world to how can I replace coffee in my diet? You probably know the answer to that one. Be warned, no political correctness in this house. Enjoy the ride.
Hello, this is Conrad, the Yerba Mate Addict here. And in this podcast interview, I chatted with Cameron Campbell, who usually goes by Coach Cam. In this interview, together, we touched on topics like sports analogies to life, the entrepreneurial journey, and especially like learning to play defense when it comes to your finances. Also, we touched on Kobe's Mamba mentality and its application to everyday life, Cam's winning formula for the morning, and a bunch of other topics like stoicism and a few more. So without any further ado, I invite you guys to watch and or listen to this interview. It was a blast to have this conversation with Cam, and I will see you guys in the interview itself. See ya.
What I think is really good to start off with, and given that I'm also a listener of podcasts and and reading books, and you probably too, is first people usually have like this kind of bullshit detector of like, why should I listen to this guy, right? There's always something in our head where it's like, okay, but like, why am I listening to you? Like, what have you done? What makes you the person to give advice? So maybe that could be a best way to kind of intro you. Like, what do you think makes you the person to give people like a life advice or money advice or different right. advice? Like, what have you accomplished that's worth, talking about? Or what have you done that might people get like, okay, this guy's interesting.
Yeah. So, for me, I think that we live in such a like guru based, and I'm going to like drop some names. I'm not like throwing shade or like, insulting at all, but like we live in such a like, do what Gary Vee says, do what Tony Robbins says, do what like all these like giants. And again, like no disrespect to those guys. I don't mean that in that way, but the fault in that is, number one, when you get put on that pedestal, you got to be perfect. Now you can't necessarily show your faults. You can't show your weak spots. You can't show, you can't be 100% authentic. And, where I am such a student, and we talked, you kind of made reference to like learning and reading, the best teachers are the transparent ones, the ones who can show you like, yes, I've succeeded in this area, but if we're going to spend the hour, let's spend 15 minutes talking about this, but I've got 45 minutes to show you this. And this is like the hard work, the shortcomings, the failure, the doubt, the that's where like you don't get to skip to this. And so for me, it's like, yes, I've had success in a number of different areas. I've had a ton of success coaching. I've had success in entrepreneurship. I've had success, in philanthropy and community work. But that's my 15, my 15 minutes. The 45 minutes is I've been at the bottom of, almost every valley that you can find, right? So from financial to business to, having business ideas swept under my feet to, leaning in what I thought was a mentor, and maybe that person wasn't, didn't have your best interest in mind, and you know, just trying to figure things out. And so I think that the first thing is, you know, the person who's telling you there's a shortcut, that's a red flag. But then the second piece is a person who's telling you, I know it all. That is, the first thing I'll say is I don't have all the answers, but I do have a lot of answers from a lot of failures that I've made in the past and some successes. But, you know, one of the things that I think what makes me comfortable sharing my thought process is I'm willing to be wrong. And so, you know, you and I may be in a knee-deep conversation about a idea or topic that maybe I know a little about, or maybe I know a lot about, but I wouldn't say like, hey, Conrad, like unpack that for me, help me understand that. And then, you know, either choose to agree and choose to disagree. So as people listen to the show, they may say like, you know, wow, that's dope. That's an idea I never thought of. Or like, yeah, that's not for me. And then the second thing is off of that is, you know, as a coach, I understand that there's more than one way to win a game, right? And so you take the game of, you know, basketball, for example. You can be a high-powered Golden State. We're scoring 130 points a game, and that may work. But then you may look at another team like, you know, the New York Knicks, like in the 90s, and they're physical, and you're scoring 70 points a game, and you're fouling out. Well, both teams can have success, and so there isn't just one way to get to success. You've got to find a success pattern that works with your personality and the way you think.
Yeah, like your own personal formula, right? One great, like I heard it somewhere that sports, because that sports is also one thing that I want to talk about with you, because team sports is something I used to be really, you know, big fan of, especially basketball, played it for quite a long time. Now still watch it and I like to, you know, just sometimes play. Is that, you know, once I heard somewhere someone great quote that sports, like especially like team sports, is like kind of like a life, but in like a small, you know, microcosm of life, where it's like you can see all the kind of how, you know, like the teams or players go through ups and downs in their careers and things, that it's like a kind of a microcosm of life. So what do you think about that? Do you think like, how would you compare like sports to life? Do you think it really has a lot of like parallels or is it completely like
they're so closely identified. So what I'd say is when you allow yourself, and you talked about your travels, you know, before we went live, when you allow yourself to be still, you begin to realize that there are patterns in life. And those patterns show themselves in different places. They show themselves in nature. You know, for us guys, like sports guys like me and you, they show themselves in sports. And so again, so as a Houston guy, I can look at the Houston Rockets and say, I understand the pattern of life of like winning championships in the mid-90s to being like really bad, to getting Yao Ming, to getting Tracy McGrady, and then, you know, Tracy McGrady having back injuries and like never quite reaching that pinnacle, to like us being like really bad, but then you get bought by a new owner and he puts new life into you, and then you acquire James Hart, right? So it's like life has these like ups and downs that sports can kind of parallel. And not only on top of that, you know, sports gives you, what's amazing about it is it can give you a framework. So you can decide, so kind of keeping the, you know, the basketball analogy going, you can decide what type of, you know, approach you have towards life. And so do you have an offensive perspective? And so like, if we're talking like money and wealth, right? So if you're a type of guy who says, I like to make money, it comes fast, I don't play a lot of defense, then like, again, like Golden State comes to mind, right? So like, yeah, we don't want to, you know, so we want to play defense. We want to save our energy for like offense. We want to score threes and dunk and like have a whole bunch of like offensive possessions. And yes, we understand that like, defense is good, saving is good. If I can step in and get a stop, great. But all the stop allows me to do is go back and spin. And so, you know, again, like why I think that I'm comfortable sharing with, you know, with you and with other people is like, I used to be a Golden State guy. So my money mentality for years used to be, I know how to make money. I enjoy spending money. Like money, like making money is like something that naturally is a strength for me. So like saving is for idiots. Defense, like who plays defense? That's no, let me just figure out. So if I do play defense, let me play defense so I can go make more money, right? Or spend more money. You know, yeah, you may be a 35% three-point shooter, but at some point you're going to go through a dry patch where you just can't get the ball in the hoop. And if you don't have defense to lean on, if you don't have saving, if you don't have investing as a mentality to lean on, when you go through those times where even though you're a scorer, but you can't get the ball in the hoop, it hurts. It hurts a little bit. You can have a mentality of the Knicks of, yes, I know that in order to win the game, I have to score more points than the other team. But that can be 68 points to 65 points. It doesn't have to be 120. So, you know, let's have really good defense and let's tire our opponents out on defense. And when we get the ball on offense, we'll take our time and maybe we'll score. We'll take all 24 seconds of the shot clock and let's get a good shot up versus Golden State says, give me 5 seconds, I want to score. But the downside to that is, you know, when there is a great opportunity on defense, so when you see the company you want to invest in, when you have the idea of the company you want to start, because you don't have a ton of offense, you don't have a ton of actual dollars, you know, like liquid, maybe you can't start that. So you know that it takes $10,000 to start this idea. You know it's going to work, but you're kind of used to puttering and playing a defensive game and you only have three. It takes so much energy to convert that defense into offense that the idea may pass you by. And so to answer your question, you know, yes, you can learn so many patterns of life through sports.
I only realized them after I was basically like done with sports. And then I transitioned to, you know, I went into different like areas of life. And then I started seeing, because I wanted to, like how, you know, the similarities and also things you can learn, like how, you know, in sports, you also have critics, that people who, you know, stay on the sidelines, but they don't do things themselves. And in life, it's kind of the same way, right? There's a lot of people like judging what you do because it's comfortable, it's easy, but they don't want to do the work themselves. And as far as like when you were saying about the offense and defense, from my point of view, it's like the Golden States are a great example that just offense can win, but they're also a great outliers in that almost none other teams have made it this way. That there is a reason why there's like this defense wins championships mentality, because it has proven to be like a winning formula for a very long time, right?
Yeah, and you know, and that's what makes like the Bulls teams of the 90s so special. That's what makes the Heat, when they had their run about 10 years ago, 17 years ago, so special is, you know, yes, they can crank it. If they need to go, they can crank and go and score. But when they need to shut you down and play half-court defense and make every possession a grind, they can do it. And so, you know, yes, you can win a championship playing defensive-minded sport. It's maybe a little bit easier playing offensive-minded sport, but the legendary, the historic teams are masters at both. And so, you know, you have to kind of identify which one of these two is your natural starting point and then work your way towards creating a well-balanced version, but like working your way towards changing your thought and your, you know, your thinking process to develop that other side of the game, because you can develop anything you want, especially when it comes to your mentality and your perspective. And so, you know, again, kind of going back to your first question, you know, the reason I'm comfortable even having this conversation is I'm transparent enough to say that I was a Golden State guy until I couldn't hit a shot. And I was like, well, wait a minute, I need to maybe develop some defense. So now I know that when I'm hot, I can go. But because I've now developed defense, I feel like I'm beginning to close into that window of like, you know, becoming an ultimate, like a legendary team, where when I need to score, I can score. When I need to get a stop, I can get a stop. And what that allows me to do is to get into the head of, you know, I think that team sports is a great comparison, but we also can't be so linear to understand that, you know, making money, having success in business, you know, those aren't, you know, zero sum games, right? So like you can have your idea, you know, and business and develop it and you can win. That doesn't mean that you're in competition with me, because we can both have, you know, everything we want.
I don't know what is it, but it feels like it's a lot more sexy to the offense. It's a lot more sexy, both in sports and also in business and in the entrepreneurial life, like, you know, growth, getting more revenue, all that, you know, all that kind of sexy stuff, but almost no one's talking about the defense side of things. So kind of how to make less stupid mistakes, how to avoid so-called like dump tacks. There's like a great book I recommend, Road Less Stupid, that Keith Cunningham, like he's a really good like proponent of avoiding the stupid mistakes. So maybe you can kind of share what made you kind of pay attention to the defense? Like what was the turning point, and how can like other people also kind of realize that, hey, you know, like people talk about that most of the time, but you really have to pay attention to the other side of things, because you're going to find yourself in the same position that you probably found yourself in just when you rely solely on offense.
Yeah. So what I say to that is, you know, and again, like just being ridiculously transparent, is I hit a time in my life where I was doing well in business, doing well in my relationships, you know, just different areas of my life. And I was all offense. And so I can take this to leverage to that, to leverage to that, and leverage. And then I hit one small speed bump. And what should have like been a slowdown or just like maybe a slight discomfort knocked me all the way off the track. And I began to look, and it's like, well, yeah, I was so offensive heavy that I wasn't playing defense at all. And so when I transitioned out of coaching, what should have been an easy career change, or maybe just, you know, I mean, life has its hard times and, you know, just bumps in the road. But I financially was all Golden State. So, you know, the thing that happens with Golden State is you have to keep scoring, right? Because you don't play defense, you can't stop scoring. So if you go cold, the other team comes back. And because you don't know how to play defense, then, you know, when Golden State gets himself in trouble, it's because they can't get stops. And so what should have been, you know, a rough patch, and you kind of lean on your defense to kind of keep going, because I didn't have any defense, because I didn't have, you know, adequate savings, because I didn't have a mindset of like, you know, not only saving, but saving to invest, it knocked me off. And so I was out of the game. It knocked me out of the game. And so to your point, when you're on the sideline, you've got two choices. You can either say, I'm going to be a fan, I'm going to be a critique, I'm going to be critical of everything that this team does, or I'm going to rebuild my team. I'm going to rebuild my franchise brick by brick by brick. And I'm going to study the best offenses. I'm going to study the best defenses. I'm going to be honest about myself and understand that, you know, I lean towards Golden State. So if I have, you know, 5 hours to learn this week, I may spend an hour learning Golden State, you know, offensive mentality. But if I spend 4 hours learning New York Knicks mentality, I've got this part already. This is natural to me. So when I put those two together, that's how you create that machine. And so speaking of, here's a real life example. You work a 9-to-5 and you make $7,000 on your 9-to-5 a month, let's just say, and you make $3,000 on your side hustle, just for example. So $10,000 a month, right? The way most people think is, I've got $10,000 coming in, so I want a Golden State, that 10, and maybe I'll save a little, I'll save $1,000. And so I'll spend $9,000, save $1,000, but that $1,000 I'll just tuck away real slow, and maybe I can stack it. Well, you should be thinking the opposite. So if you have $10,000 coming in a month, you've got to be thinking, how do I, New York Knicks, how do I live off of $3,000 and save $7,000? Now that savings, you're not just saving it to save, right? Because again, if you have a spender, I have a spender's mentality. I enjoy spending. I like spending on clothes. I like spending on cars. I like buying dinner. But I like, if Christmas time, I enjoy like buying gifts for my family and gifts. I mean, I enjoy spending. So I had to fix the way I thought. And it's like, it's not about spending for things that will go away. But if I take that Golden State mentality and plug it into saving, but more importantly, investing, then if I can live off of $3,000, so if I can have the New York Knicks mentality about physically spending in my day-to-day life, then I can take this $7,000, and then a month is 14, then 21, then, you know, so build it up. So by the time it's built, now I can spend. I'm still spending because I like to spend, but that spending is focused on investing, and that investing will create additional revenue and resources, obviously, which will then come back down. So the idea is, in that example of, you know, the $10,000 a month guy, if I can live off of three, and if I can save seven, when that idea comes to start a landscape company, right, for example, right, and I know I need $14,000 to save to start it. Well, in the old mentality, it would take me 14 months to get to, if I'm saving $1,000 a month, it takes me 14 months to get to $14,000. But if I flip my mentality and I can live tight, right? Again, if you've been in any type of like struggle, if you've been broke before, then you should be able to take the best part of like, do I need Hulu and Netflix and Amazon Prime? And like, do I need all of those? Or can I just take like the best one and save $20 a month? You want to spend defensively and you want to save and invest offensively. So when that opportunity comes to start that landscape business and you know you need $14,000 to start it, well, hell, I can start in 2 months. Just give me 60 days. I have $14,000. And then from there, that $14,000, you know, obviously you invest that and you want to make that profitable as quick as possible. So even if it's producing you 10% a month, let's just say, so that $14,000 is kicking you back $1,400 a month, then that $1,400 doesn't go over here. So it's like, don't go get the Lamborghini, right? So it's like, keep that money over here. So that $14,000 is going right back into your machine. And so before you know it, this machine is kicking off so much that maybe now I can take $1,000 of it a month and raise my quality of living to $4,000 a month. And after bills, and maybe I can raise it to $5,000 a month. I've had it all. I've had the nice vehicles. I've had the crazy big house. And, you know, I mean, I'm blessed now. I don't want to make it sound like I'm not. But it's like you experience that stuff. And it's like, okay, cool. Well, that's the short-term game, but I'm playing forever. And so sometimes playing forever means I've got to put off some of those caviar dreams, because the best thing about living within your means is getting the thing you want. And you don't blink, right? So I had this truck I bought some years ago. I mean, it was nice, dude. I mean, black leather, I mean, just crazy, crazy nice. And I remember the guy telling me like how much the monthly note would be. And I'm like, okay, well, how do I figure that out? And again, I know how to make money. So if I do this, I can, and that note was so expensive, dude. But then when you begin to flip your mentality, it's like, okay, I can drive this, you know, the car is not as nice. And that's where like your ego gets tied into it, right? So it's like, I'm still me, no matter what I'm driving. It's a Range Rover, Lexus, an old pickup truck. Like if I'm the man, I'm still the man, no matter what I'm driving. So if you can get that part right, then when you go get that next vehicle, so let's just say the next one is a Lexus, right? Really nice Lexus. When it's time to get it, it's like, cool, no problem. Sign here, I'll drive, right? And so the idea isn't like I'm living so far outside of my means that like if a repair comes up or the cost of gas goes up or I need tires, it's like, oh, how am I going to pay for tires? Because you're living so far out of your means. But if you can flip the way you think, then you actually enjoy, that's the whole purpose, right? So just because you can make the payment doesn't mean that you can really afford it. And so going back to your very first question, I used to think Golden State only, and I got burned. And so that's why I'm in position to say, wait a minute, there's a different way that we can do this.
I think that the quote that came to my mind when you were saying, you know, living above and below your means, that means that there is the guy called Naval Ravikant. I don't know if you know him. He has a quote.
Love that dude, bro.
Yeah, he's the best. He has a beautiful quote that I actually just researched today. I just, a completely separate topic. I think he said that people who live below their means enjoy a freedom that people who live above their means can't fathom.
Never, they can't even understand it. They can't even understand it, bro. And again, like I've been on both sides, right? And so like that idea, so here's how you can tell the difference. So the guy who has a Lexus, who is time for service, not even like something broke down, but you know, like you got to maintain his vehicles. The guy who goes in and is like, okay, it's time for service schedule one. And he's like, how much is this? Do I need that? Can I take this out? Can I do this myself? Da, da, da. And he's like angry. Versus the guy who walks in and was like, hey, my note came off, time for the service. What else can you sell me? Like, what else do you have? What else does my vehicle need? And just the energy you give off is pleasure, because you're not under the stress of like, I'm living outside of my means. So every single thing gives me anxiety. You know, and again, like one of the reasons that like whenever I am driving or kind of out and about and I see like a vehicle broken down on the side of the road, I always stop. Like, dude, I've drove in so many crap cars, crap trucks, flat tires, overheating, won't start. So I've been there before. I know the stress of like, I need this vehicle to turn on, right? Like, and if it doesn't, like, I'm in trouble. Most people live off of 10. A few live off of 9 and save 1. Most people would tell you live off of 7 and save 3. Because I've been all three of those places, I'm like, nah, live off of 3. If you can live off of 3 and save 7, life life becomes all good all the time.
Given that you had to like change your mentality, you know, completely from offensive to, you know, learn that defensive. And that's very curious for me, because I think that the strength is found where you were able to like learn something or develop something that didn't come naturally to you. I think that that's where the real growth is. So maybe you have some like specific, like real word advice, like what are the major like defensive blocks for you? Like, what do you recommend people to maybe do right now or just think about doing when it comes to the defense side of things, just generally in their life right now, that most of them are not thinking about?
Yeah. So the first thing I say is this is the perfect time to flip your or shift your mindset, right? So during COVID, if you, and I've done it myself, if you haven't gone through your operational budget or your, what I call like your family operational budget, whether you're single, married, whatever, like your household budget, and just stripped it down to the bones. Like, what do I not need? Right. So like, what gives me pleasure and what do I not need? And be honest. And so for me, like, you know, I like vodka, I like champagne, I like cigars, I like to golf. Right. And just, so I'm not, you don't want to be so penny pinching that you're walking around miserable, like Scrooge. But for me, it was like, okay, I like golfing a lot. I just started it like a year and a half ago. So like, I'm still bad, but it's fun because I don't take it too serious, you know? And so if my golf memberships are $100 a month and, you know, my spirits and champagne are about $100 a month. And if I smoke, you know, 3 cigars a month at, you know, this will say $50. So I have $250 in my budget of just recreation and pleasure. Right? There's nothing wrong with that. For me, it's like the challenge and the curiosity, and some of us being an athlete. So how can I turn a $250 monthly allocation? How do I cut that in half? How do I cut that to 125? Okay. Do I need to golf? Can I put golf on pause for now? Right. I golf typically like once a week, once every other week. And so it's like most people golf like 3 times a year. Right. So it's like, if I can cut my golfing down, you know, 75% to once a month, I can save there. Right. If I, you know, am more selective with my spirits and what I, you know, what I drink, or maybe not even like changing the quality of it, but if I just drink 1 drink less a week, then I can save that. Right. If I buy a bigger, higher quality cigar that burns slower, then instead of buying, you know, 4 $15 cigars, I can buy like 1 $30 cigar. And just, you know, puff on that for, you know, for the month. It becomes a challenge of, are you willing to be uncomfortable? That's where I think the biggest change happens. And so either you're dropped in discomfort or you can be aware enough to slice your own discomfort, right? So like I was listening to something the other day and it talked about, you know, like cooking, I think like cooking a turtle, right? So it's like a turtle will jump out of hot water. But if you leave a turtle in, you know, warm water and it's raised, you know, degree 1 at a time, he'll cook itself because he doesn't realize that it's you know, the water's warming up and it's boiling. So mm-hmm. The idea is in life, either you get dropped in hot water like I did and it's like, oh, that's hot. So let me go right back to comfort. No, right? So I jumped out of that hot water and I put myself in that 1 degree warmer. So the first thing I say is, you know, let's slice and dice and have fun with it, right? So like, you know, again, do you need $15 Hulu, $15 Netflix, $15 Prime, or does Prime TV come with your Amazon Prime membership, right? So maybe I can activate that and use that and then cut out Hulu or cut out, you know, Amazon or whatever it may be. I'm not Amazon, but Netflix. But so the whole idea is, can I have fun? Can I see it as a challenge? But then, you know, the most important second piece is, can I remain humble and curious? Because the second you think you know it all, you're toast. The second you think you can't get any better is the second you stop getting better. And as an athlete, the second you stop getting better is the second I'm about to come and whoop your ass. And so, you know, I mean, that's just the way I think as a competitor, right? So I'm always trying to get better. And so some of this, you're competing within yourself. And so, you know, you may get to the point to where you cut your disposable income within your family operational budget down. And it's like, okay, I can't get any leaner. You know, I cut golfing out completely. I've cut this, you know, the cigars out. Now I'll just kind of my champagne or whatever I like. This is where I want to stop. Okay, great. So you know, cut your 250 disposable income down to 50. Well, what are you doing with the 200 bucks? Is it going back out the window? Are you eating out more? Then this is kind of recycling. No, the idea is to turn that 200 into leverage. And that's not always, you know, stock. So you may say, okay, here's 200 bucks a month for me to step my game up. So this is where your athlete mentality turns into the off season, right? So, you know, champions are built in the off season. So you could very well say, I want to turn that extra 200 bucks into an investment account. Great. You can turn that 200 bucks into taking courses. You can take that 200 bucks into reading books. You can take that 200 bucks into maybe working 2 hours less at your 9-to-5 job to spend more time relaxing and becoming one with your body and like picking up your faith. And you can take those $200 more than what you were saying earlier, just like, you know, put it here. No, you begin to say, like, if this is my overall game, where do I need to step my game up? So if work has me overstressed, if I work 2 hours less a week and I spend 1 hour more in meditation, in quiet time, or just, you know, taking a half a day drive across the state and just relaxing and quiet, like that's $200 better spent than trying to become a stock expert on, you know, Robinhood and becoming a day trader and thinking that I can outsmart, you know, Wall Street guys who spend all day in the stock market, but I'm so smart. And so, you know, so you got to be able to be in tune with yourself.
It feels like you know, many of those like things you just talked about, which is like, you know, basically kind of thinking, a lot of it is just long-term thinking versus short-term thinking, right? Like second order consequences. It feels like for some reason, it feels like it comes harder and harder now to us, because I, you know, I'm not different. I also struggle with this. I'm trying to slowly learn, but it feels like just kind of putting off the immediate pleasure just because I feel like it's so easily accessible. You know, for example, there's a great, my uncle told me some time ago, a great piece of wisdom that someone gave him once in his life, that you can't afford this because it's cheap. Like a lot of us, you know, buy things because they are cheap, but he actually told him, like, you can't afford it because it's cheap. And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, well, if you don't have a lot of money, it's actually better to like just save a bit and buy something better that's going to last you a lot, and all those like cheap stuff. That's usually, you know, that's very like short term. So yeah, in the here and now it's cheaper, but in the long run it's gonna cost you a lot more. So you can't actually afford it because you will have to buy it like 3 times this year.
You know, it's so right. And I think this is another place that I can be open about my failures, and I had to reprogram myself. So, you know, you take your uncle's advice and that's like so like spot on. And you apply it to your diet, right? So for me, so I'm 200, so pre-COVID, right? So COVID, we all put some weight on. So pre-COVID, I was 255 pounds. I'm like 263 now. So I've got like 8 more pounds to kind of get back to like my pre-COVID weight. Check 2 years ago, bro. Oh yeah, I forgot, you got to convert, yeah. 2 years ago, I was 300 pounds, bro. Like every bit. Now I'm a big guy. I can kind of carry it, right? But like not making good choices. So you think about it for a second. You're a 9-to-5er. I mean, you're an entrepreneur, you're hustling, whatever. The whole idea of I'm going to buy a bag of chips and a Monster for a snack and then get home and eat Chick-fil-A or whatever it may be, right? And again, I'm not judging. But this is another place that, if I'm honest and being transparent with you and the listeners, that I had a broken mentality. So it almost becomes, when you go grocery shopping, yeah, you can get the prepackaged microwave pasta in a microwave, and you know it's done in 90 seconds, and it's kind of a quick snack, and it's a dollar, right? And you buy three of those to kind of snack you throughout the day, or you can buy the most expensive, highest quality thing that you can afford that's actually rocket fuel for your body. Because to your uncle's point, you keep putting cheap junk into a car, you get junk food, right? So it's like you don't go anywhere. So if you're going to invest in an energy source for your body, you might as well invest in less rocket fuel than a whole bunch of junk food. You've got to be so careful about what you put into your body, not just diet, but your mentality, the things you listen to, the things you watch. And so even though you're talking about that Naval podcast, it's like, if I'm going to give something, if I'm going to give YouTube 3 hours of, let's just say it takes 2 days to listen to it, that podcast is so deep, you can really only listen to it for like 30 minutes at a time and like sit, reflect, take notes and come back, right? But you know, if you're going to give YouTube 3 hours of your time, are you going to watch like car videos and like hype videos, like girls or whatever, right? It's like, or am I going to put rocket fuel into my body, even if I like cars, right? So as a guy who enjoys like cars and like nice stuff, I'd rather listen to Naval for 3 hours because it would get me closer to what I actually want. I don't want to watch, you know, like you drive, you know, Conrad drive the Lamborghini. I want the Lamborghini. So let me do things that get me closer to achieving the Lamborghini. I think that something you said earlier, we live in such a, what I call like opt-out culture, right? So it's like, you want a $250,000 Lamborghini, for example, right? Just kind of throwing it out there. We live in a perspective like that says, Lamborghinis are nice. They're very nice. So we live in such a culture that says, you can't afford the $250,000 Lamborghini. It's not even realistic. Maybe you can go to a car show and pay a few bucks to look at it, but just sit here and get this dopamine drip of me driving my Lamborghini, and you're never going to get any closer. Instead of saying, you know what, it's $250,000. That's down the line. I'm not going to focus on it. I'm going to focus on just getting to a dollar, turn that into 2, into 4, into 8, into 16, into 32, into 64, right? And so it's like, because we live in such an opt-out culture, it's like, let me opt out of creating and building the life I want. And let me just opt into watching the life I want instead of jumping in the game, to your point, and actually building the life I want. And maybe it'll take a little bit longer to realize it, but even if it takes me 3 years to realize it, that guy who's watching is never going to realize it. He's going to watch. And before you know it, he'll be watching me, right? On YouTube, in that example, living my life. But it's like, dude, opt in to the life you want. And understand that it's a forever game. It's not a 12-month, 18-month, 24-month. It's a forever game.
Exactly. Like, what did it take in you to, like, basically at some point in life, I don't know when was it for you to change that mentality, to choose your own path and, like, kind of go the harder road, in a sense, like the path less traveled. What was the point for you? And also, like, what do you think it takes to do it for the people that maybe will be watching this, that maybe are still like kind of stuck, or they're kind of in the crossroads, they're somewhere in the middle, like when we all once were. So what did it take for you? And what do you think the people can take away from like your experience or like your path?
Yeah, so three things. I'll try to make them like a little more concise. So the first thing is, as an athlete, as a coach, like, losing sucks. Like, forget, and I'm one of those guys, like, learn from your losses and all that kind of stuff. Yes, but the act of losing sucks. So for me, I said, I don't want to lose, but if I get beat, never get beat the same way twice. Right? So if you and I are playing basketball, for example, and you got like a really good 3-point shot, I'm a bigger guy, so maybe I can't play defense as tight. If you kill me with a 3-point shot and we're playing a game, don't lose to Conrad twice the same way. So you got to figure out different ways to lose. And if you figure out different ways to lose, what you're actually learning is more ways to win. That's the first thing. The second thing is, and this comes from the book Principles by Ray Dalio, right? So like, Ray Dalio is just brilliant, brilliant mind. And one of the things he talks about is like, pain points are triggers. right? So when you, again, in the example of the guy who makes $10,000 a month, when you get to your niece's birthday party and you don't have the physical money to buy her a gift that you want to, and that hurts, like that hurt is an alarm that should go off and say, well, wait a minute, like there's something I want to do that I can't do. So instead of like sitting in the hurt should be a trigger to say, how do I work backwards to turn this alarm off so I don't experience this again? So then it becomes, so you have to be comfortable asking yourself questions and be comfortable with some of the ugly answers. So why don't I have $100 to buy my niece a gift? Well, I went to the club last night and threw it. Or, you know, like I bought lotto tickets or whatever the answer may be. Well, why'd you do that? So if you can like go back and ask yourself all these questions, the path becomes very clear. The last piece I'd say is take a second. And if you're in the game, substitute yourself out. Now, this is one of the things I learned as a coach. One of the best things that a really good coach can do, one of the gifts that a coach can provide a player is to pull them out of the game. So, so many times our ego's tied into like my performance and I'm beating this guy one-on-one and I'm a starter, I'm the man. Well, here's the thing. You get a completely different perspective of the game on the sideline, right? So like you take our example of like basketball. So like, let's take Chris Paul, a great, great basketball like point guard, right? If Chris Paul can like watch the game on the sideline, he can get back in the game. He's not out of the game. He's not injured. He's not out of the game. But if you can come back and just watch the game on the sideline and pick up the momentum, pick up the flow, pick up the tendencies, pick up the opportunities, when you get back into the game becomes easier. It becomes slower. It becomes transparent. What happens for most of us, when we come out of the game, we're fussing at our coach. We're arguing. We're upset. We're insecure, like, oh, I made a mistake, so I'm getting pulled out. No. I'm pulling you out so you can see what you did. So when you go back into the game, you can learn and take advantage of the opportunities that the game presents itself. So that takes a little bit of ego swallowing and saying, like, yes, I may be embarrassed of coming out of the game. My mom's in the stands. It doesn't feel good. But since I'm not in the game, I might as well watch the game and get better. And so it becomes about, like, watching all the opportunities that are presented in front of you.
And what do you think is like the parallel or like the example in life when it comes to the third point, when it comes to like watching from sidelines? Is it taking some time off to reflect on things? Is it instead of like doing to kind of a bit take a step back and you know give yourself some time to just, you know, do nothing? Like what do you think is the kind of the, you know, the real life example, not sports like analogy?
For anybody who went to university, maybe the first lesson you realized is 24 hours is a lot of time, right? And so, you know, if you work a 9-to-5, so yes, 8 hours of your life are dedicated to like working in this job and maybe 30 minutes of commute each way, right? But so that's, you know, 9 hours, that's 15 hours left in your day. So if you are driving 30 minutes each way and you're just mindlessly listening to the radio, you're missing these opportunities to improve. And so it's almost like if you were to dump your day onto a spreadsheet and you said 8 hours are blocked away for me to work. I have to work. I'm going to give my best. I'm not slacking at work, right? So but I've got 30 minutes during the day while I'm driving, just sitting in traffic. I don't need like all of my mental calibration to drive. I can listen to a podcast. I can listen to a book. I can challenge my thoughts. I can decompress on my drive to work about the things that I did well yesterday and take mental notes in my phone about, hey, I did a good job of being in tune with family. I sent, you know, my Aunt Joyce flowers for her birthday, or, you know, I'm so in tune with what's going on with my spiritual life that I learned this thing. And so what you begin to learn is, 24 hours is a ton of time. And so like for me, I only need 5.5-6 hours of sleep a night. And so if you've got, you know, 8 hours built in to work, you've got 6 hours of sleep, that's 14. You've got an hour drive, that's 15. You've got 9 other hours of the day. And so what are you doing with that time? And so, and it's not even all about like money being capitalistic. Maybe you say, okay, well, I want to figure out how do I meal prep especially like a single guy, like how do I meal prep and spend 2 hours cooking for the entire week instead of having to spend 45 minutes every single night throwing something together? Maybe if I, you know, again, take that idea of a spreadsheet and dump the whole week out, then I can say, okay, well, here's my 2 hours of meal prep. Here's my hour at the grocery store. That's 3 hours tucked away for the within the whole week. I've got all this time to get better. And so do I need to spend time reflecting? Do I need to spend time asking myself, like, what are my tendencies? What are my habits? Why do I respond to negative response, you know, negative news like that? Why do I always lash out? Why am I so quick to have a response that a text message or an email? So some of it is like asking, like spending time asking yourself really honest questions about yourself. But then some of it is design. This is a fun part for me, like designing the life you want. And once you design that life you want, taking brick by brick by brick step, dump your day onto a spreadsheet, and you'll be almost embarrassed by how much time you just fart away. So even if you do say, I want an hour of social media and YouTube indulgence, no problem, put that hour in there. But you still, in that previous example, you still got 9 hours of your day that are yours. And so make the most of those, make the most of those hours.
Okay. So it seems like to use a sports analogy would be that you gotta, in a way, you gotta prepare your, I think it all, like a lot of things we touched on today, it feels like a lot of it comes down to preparing yourself for success, in a sense that, you know, like when all you have at home is, you know, bad stuff to eat, like you're gonna eat bad stuff, but it takes the kind of the preparation aspect of, like, you know, sitting down, figuring out like a shopping list, going to the shop, and then stocking your, you know, everything in your drawers with good things, and then preparing that meal, and then even maybe taking it one step further to do meal prep. But a lot of it, it feels like, is actually in these times where it seems like our only way forward is to move forward. A lot of it feels like is, you know, take 2 steps back to then move, you know, 5 steps forward. And I don't know, I'm also not perfect, but I'm learning more and more that actually a lot of those things that kind of on the surface level seem like, okay, you're just not being productive, because now it's like this constant thing with like being productive, efficient. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like it feels like this is what's everywhere on the top, that we forgot that there is this other side of things where you gotta like reflect, you gotta like think, you gotta like ponder, you gotta like slow down, you gotta let yourself rest. Like there is this also this element, and in the truth, it's like a balancing act that's never truly balanced, because yeah, like balance is just you know, like a place where you want to reach, but it's not possible, right?
Right. Yeah. You know, it's so funny you say that. And so, you know, I like when you ask a question, like, how did you get to that point? I'm a really curious person. And I think that I spent like my 20s convincing myself that I knew everything. And so I stopped learning. Right. So I came across something that said Warren Buffett spends 6 hours a day reading. Right. And so, again, he's reading like, you know, ledgers and you know, financial documents and financial resources, which, you know, you may not spend all your time doing that. Easy to say, well, it's easy for him. He's rich. Right. But it turns out he's been doing that for years. So then I came across a quote that, you know, Abraham Lincoln said, if I've got 8 hours to cut down a tree, I'm going to spend 6 hours sharpening my blade. And so, again, going back to what we talked about earlier, if I can be aware enough to identify, Abraham Lincoln said this a couple hundred years ago, Warren Buffett is doing this today. It's not that, to your point, we're not working. I'm sharpening my blade for 6 hours. So when it's time for me to cut that tree, I don't need 8 hours of a dull blade. I can just cut that thing in 2 hours, right? So then the other side of it is, am I willing to remain curious? Am I willing to remain foolish? Can I plug into something and learn something different? Which goes back to the very beginning of our conversation is, you know, the moment that you think you know everything, you're out of the game. And so can I take, you know, something that I don't know, or a concept I don't know? Am I willing to look at my skill set and my strengths and weaknesses and be honest and say, I don't know much about this, so let me figure out how to get better at it. And, you know, the easy thing is kind of going back to grade school, it's easy to go from an F to a D, right? That first jump is a big old jump from like having a 50 to a 70 is a jump. But then a 70 to a 75 is a little harder, 75 to an 80. And so getting up to that A is really tough. But if you can get, you know, if you can get to that 85 point across most of your life, the power of leverage begins to make the momentum so much easier. And that's kind of why I started this course. You know, win the first quarter of your day. That's really what it's all about, is if you can create momentum and leverage to start your day versus, you know, you got to be at work at 9 o'clock and you wake up at 8, and you got just a 15 minute commute. You wake up at 8, kind of get yourself together. You're not quite, you're disheveled. And the first thing you get is a negative email from your boss. Your day's gone to heck. But if you get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, spend time with God, spend time with your higher being, get your body together, you know, reflect on yesterday, begin to write and journal and, you know, project the life you want to live and write your affirmations and, you know, begin to stimulate yourself based upon the previous successes that you've had. Because the fact of the matter is, the reason that I don't crap on the Robin Hood day trader, but the, you know, people who tell me that they day trade as passive income, that's not passive income. You're starting at zero every day, right? And so again, like, it is a way to make money. I'm not saying that, but the idea that Robin Hood is your path to wealth. No, it's a starting point. Once you're going to wake up one day and say, damn, I'm tired of starting at zero, right? Every day you start back at zero as a day trader. Although that is a part of a strategy, that's short term, right? That's not long term. And so if you begin to think long term, if you can leverage 5,000 bucks out of Robin Hood and then take that and put that into build a machine that is passive income, now you're building that machine. Now you're truly falling into that passive income window. But again, you know, so much of it, I still say this, remains in remaining curious, remaining humble, and always wanting to improve.
Yeah, I got that feeling from you that you have this mindset that is referred to, I think, Tom Bilyeu, that's got like the impact theory. He's like really famous now with the interviews. He's got this concept of like the eternal student kind of mindset, that where you like always, you know, like we always learn, like you always adapt. So I guess I'm really curious in your case, like how, because I think this is one of the like the fundamental blocks. I also believe this, that to really, you know, taking your life to like some, you know, new level, to really improving, is to adopt that mindset. I guess my question would be like, how do you think in your case it was like some specific moment in life where you were always like that, or was it a case of some kind of, you know, like different things accumulating and then you just kind of rolled with the momentum until now? So how did it look for you? Because I think it's like one of the fundamental things that people need to kind of adopt when it comes to their mindset, like forget the specific tools and tactics, but this is like an in general approach to life. Like, hey, I know nothing and then I need to learn. And if I don't know, that's okay. If I make a mistake, that's okay. I just need to take, you know, the feedback and just kind of course correct and then just repeat. So like what was it for you? Like, was it specific moments or was it like accumulation things, or were you always like that and you just kept it in yourself?
So for me, I was always like a learner. Like, I really enjoyed like learning, right? And so, you know, the first thing is, you know, the curiosity thing we talked about, you know, being a lifelong learner, which you kind of touched on. But then the other side of it is like, you can't take yourself too serious, right? And so I think that especially like, you know, for your listenership, the guys, it's like there's so much ego and like tied up into winning and losing, that I was a kid like in like third or fifth grade, for example, like I was a terrible speller. I don't know if I had like dyslexia, I'm not sure, but I just was a very poor speller, right? And so it was like, I'm so curious to figure out not what's wrong with me, but to figure out the right answer, right? So it's like, it's less about taking a retest to prove I can get 100. It's more about taking a retest to say, I'll never misspell this pattern or style of words ever again, because, you know, I don't want to feel that feeling. And so it's either rooted in the curiosity, and curiosity can say, well, how do I take this and apply it to this and apply it to this? Or the feeling of defeat. And so when you kind of take it back for me, you know, in my space and time in athletics, it was, you know, okay, so I played on a really bad football team. How do I get better? What do I bring to the table for us to be successful? Well, I brought everything that I could to the table. Where is there more? And so, you know, I have this saying that, you know, there are no periods in life. There are only commas. And so I can take the curiosity of a poor speller and add that to an athlete and add that to my diet and add that to my family life, add that to my faith life, add that, right? So it's like you're just adding all these commas. And before you know it, you've created this trail of a track record that you can go back and reference. So, you know, during COVID, when you're checking on people that you hadn't checked on in a long time, and it's like, okay, I remember in my early 20s when it was a hustle life and hustle, hustle, hustle. And, you know, I'm not maintaining relationships that are important to me. I remember how it felt when a friend moved out of state and I didn't even realize it. So if I can be aware enough to go grab that lesson and say, let me just set a calendar reminder just to check on these 20 people, 5 people a week for 4 weeks. It takes 5 minutes to send a text. So Sunday before I go to church or Sunday before I go play golf, let me just send 5 quick notes. Hey, how's this family member doing? Or, you know, checking on you. I know you have an older aunt. Right, just during these COVID times, because the last thing you want is the feeling that you felt of like, I'm a terrible friend in my 20s when my friend moved and I didn't realize it. You know, you don't want that feeling of, oh, my, you know, my aunt passed away due to COVID. And not that I could have done anything to change it, but I wasn't there for that person in their life because I was so, you know, focused and hell bent. There has to be this push and pull of I'm engaged, I'm in the moment, I'm right now. But I'm also distant and unplugged, and you can't get to me, you know, every single day. And so, you know, before COVID, I like my weekly schedule laid out pretty consistent. Mondays and Wednesdays, desk work, phone on airplane mode. You can't get in contact. You can send me an email. I'm not going to see it, but you know, you're not getting me away from my desk until lunch. Like that, non-negotiable, right? Then Wednesdays, I go to Bible study. I kind of, you know, get out, move a little bit. I get around the city. Then on Monday and Wednesday afternoon, just kind of chefing up paperwork, sending out invoices, checking on, you know, staff, you know, kind of working on strategic planning. I'm the type of guy like that required, that took years for me to get that kind of discipline. I don't like sitting and doing desk work, right? So Tuesdays and Thursdays, I get up at 4 o'clock all ready to go work out. So I would get up at 4 o'clock, go work out, bring a change of clothes. I would leave and go downtown and have coffee or breakfast at a restaurant or a hotel, like a nice restaurant or hotel. I do not take meetings at Starbucks, right? Like I've never seen anybody close a $1 million deal at Starbucks, right? So like, I'm not a big coffee guy, but I don't take, like, if you're going to meet, let's go meet at a fine hotel or, you know, something, you know, nicer and higher end, right?
It feels like what you're also saying through all of that and through your stories and through like your life story and how you went through things is that like you also gotta understand, and that's also a sports analogy, that life is like a process, and you can't just go from A to B like in an instant. And like learning all those things that you know now, like knowing them, it took you a lot of also failures and you know, just kind of bad times, good times, you know, rising, falling, and that you also somehow have to learn to enjoy the process, how the sports, you know, people in sports a lot of times talk about, like, you gotta learn to enjoy the process, the everyday grind, the getting better, like, bit by bit. Would you say that's like kind of an accurate, I don't know, takeaway from what you were saying?
Spot on. Yeah. So, you know, what I'd add to that is the pleasure of winning in a sports environment is the off season. So it's getting up, it's failing at reps, you know, it's cutting it short, it's battling through injuries, you know, it's gaining 5 pounds on your bench press week over week over week and failing and not being able to get to it. So if you train hard enough in the off season, I'm not saying that the season is cake and ice cream. What I'm saying is, you get to live the reward of the sacrifices you made in the off season. So in that example I provided with my weekly schedule, you know, the off season was, you know, I'm spending 4 days a week networking and out and about and only one day at my desk, but I'm looking at the productivity of my business flatline. So which one do I want more? And so it's, let me sit at my desk and build the stamina, right? So that's what it's about, the stamina of doing the things you don't want to do until you build up enough stamina that you create maturity. And the maturity gets you to, yeah, I don't like to do it, but you know what? It's not even about what I like to do. And that's when I began to like dive into stoicism and understanding that, yeah, so it's not about what I want to do, because what I want to do is an emotion. Emotions can change, right? So it's not about, you know, how I feel at the time. It's about the most important thing for me to get done right now.
Okay. So yeah, that's a good segue to the last things that I wanted to ask you about. So we talked a lot about mindset, but we also had some hands-on advice, but the last few questions I had are more than like specific things that, you know, like from your life and that are very like hands-on. So I think one of them, maybe that's a good segue, is stoicism. I would say I also have been, you know, like caught into it just a few months ago, and I really love the philosophy, and it's still a lot of things for me to explore there and kind of integrate. But I kind of view it as a form of a tool, like something that you, it's a philosophy, but in a way it's like a tool for life. So, how does it help you, and how do you use it? And also maybe like, what are some of your favorite resources when it comes to like, diving into the, you know, the philosophy of stoicism? I know Ryan Holiday is one of them, so maybe you can touch on that too.
Yeah, for sure. So I found stoicism about a year and a half ago. I had the opportunity to interview Pastor Ralph Douglas West for my book. And one of the first things that he, into our interview, began to talk to me about was stoicism. And, you know, he's like, go read Marcus Aurelius's Meditations. And I went to read it and I'm like, I can't read this. Right. So it's like, you know, just the words are just, you know, it's written like old timey language. Right. And
yeah.
So I felt a pain point. So I was like, I can't read this. And I caught myself, because like, can't is like, I don't, can't for me, can't, don't, won't, those are triggers. So I was like, wait a minute, I'm uncomfortable. So maybe I don't have the ability to do it now. So let me go try to find new age philosophy that is based on stoicism, that is easier for me to comprehend, easier for me to like to read and kind of make sense of. And that's where I found Ryan Holiday, right? So, you know, ego is an enemy, the obstacle is the way. And, you know, so it's almost like, you know, a kid, like a baby trying to chew steak. And it's like, yeah, I can't quite chew it. So let me move back from steak to chicken, chicken to mashed potatoes. Okay, I can do mashed potatoes. I can understand it. Let me add some chicken. And then before you know it, you're back to steak. And so I say that's kind of what my evolution of stoicism was, you know, not sitting in, you know, Epictetus and, you know, all these different guys and Pluto and, or Plato rather, and, you know, and just saying like, I'm so deep and I'm so well thought out. It was like, no, let me see how deep the water is. Let me understand how well I can swim, and then let me inch my way towards it. In a sports analogy, stoicism is a scheme, right? So like we talked about with Golden State and the Knicks, if you apply stoicism on top of whatever you're doing, it gives you such a perspective, right? So it allows you to red flag when your emotions are stronger when they should be. It allows you to red flag rationale and thought process, and when it's key, when it's off, when it's in balance, you know when it's in sync. That's the easy part, but knowing when it's off. And so getting a really bad text message sends a spike up your body instantly, right? And that's natural. So the whole idea is, it's not to defeat the spike, it's to understand the spike, put the spike over here. Let me reread the message. Do I have to respond to this immediately? Yes or no? right? Because if I do respond immediately and I still have that spike on, I'm going to give a spike response, right? But no, okay, so the dry cleaners burned your shirt that you were going to, you know, pack tomorrow for a trip. Spike. That's unacceptable. I need a refund. Da, da, da. Well, that refund isn't going to get you a shirt right now. So you might as well take that spike, put it over, and maybe you don't even need to respond to this immediately, because responding to this does not get you closer to a shirt for you to pack. So put that down and then begin to think, like, what do I need? What's the most important thing that I need right now? Not that I need to do, what do I need? I need a shirt. Okay, so I can reach in the closet and iron a shirt. I can run to the store and grab a shirt. I can go wash a shirt really quick. What options do I have? So then once I'm balanced and I have my framework and I'm taking that spike out and I begin to kind of come level headed, I can come back and say, thanks for the update. I appreciate that. Because the other side to it is, if you don't have perspective, you know, you miss the opportunity of, they could have not said anything. And I could have gone to the dry cleaners to pick my shirt up and been even more upset when I realized that it's a hole in it, right? So I at least appreciate the perspective of you giving me a heads up. Stoicism gives you the framework to make decisions, to respond, and to behave in a way that gets you ultimately what you want. Because in that shirt example, you know, fussing at the person and cursing them out gets you zero closer to what you ultimately want. What you want is a shirt for you to pack for your trip. And so stoicism helps you put things in perspective. It helps you put things in framework, and it gives you ultimately an advantage, because to your point, and you said it earlier, it was so true, we live in such a, you know, response kind of culture that even having a kind word to say, you know, that's unfortunate, I hate that you burned my shirt, hopefully you guys can learn from that experience so it doesn't affect your business, right? So even to have that kind of response, that person on the other side of that phone wasn't expecting that. That may take some burden relief off of their back, right? So stoicism gives you a framework of how to think and how to carry yourself that I think is, you know, is really second to none.
Yeah, beautifully summarized. That's why I wanted to say that. Like, for me, it's like all about like putting things into perspective. Like, it's a lot about like putting things into like perspective of death, of the like kind of the, you know, life, the ups and downs, and how it really is. And then you kind of like listening to some of the thoughts of, for example, like Marcus Aurelius. It's, I don't know, it's also very interesting that someone who lived so long ago had such thoughts that can be applied so well today. And I feel like it's also kind of a curse right now that everyone, just because like there's, you know, more books and more information and more new things now like released more, you know, than ever, like every day there's like, I don't know, probably like hundreds or thousands of books released, but before it wasn't the case, that now somehow we switched that, you know, everyone thinks that the new things are the, you know, the better things because they're up to date. But I believe, I don't know, what about you, that like if something, that there's this law actually that if something has stood such a test of time, it has a higher chance that it's gonna you know, last more time than this new thing that just came out today, because it's just like a proof that, I mean, if it lasted, I don't know, 1,000 years or 2,000 years, it means that it contains some wisdom that you know, applied before and applied throughout the years. So it means it's probably better than like some guru that thinks he has like some, you know, answer to all your problems.
so true. So think about what you said. You're so right. So we know for a fact that protein, carbohydrates, vegetables, and fruits are what our body needs to operate at a high level, right? That has been the history of sports science or you know, dietary science. Those, you know, things or whatever combination of what you need. Hot Cheetos, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, Golden Bears, you know, dipping kangaroos and icing, right? All these fads of like junk, just different kind of junk, potato chips, popcorn, soda, candy, Skittles, M&Ms, they're all junk. And they have to change, to your point. Junk has to change shape and change form and change marketing and change packaging and change key demographics and change price points all the time, because, you know, science tells us that, you know, there's too many carbs in cereal. Okay, well, low carb, low sugar. Then you go to, you know, Skittles. Skittles are full of sugar. Okay, well, you know, reduce, no fat. Well, now you've got, like, you know, alcohol sugars, and this is junk. And that, what, to your point, you're so true. At the end of the day, protein, vegetable, this is same things from the history of time. This is what your body needs. As I was in my dietary evolution, was like, okay, no more burgers. I'm going to eat Subway. And then you begin to look, and it's like, the bread at Subway is even the wheat bread, this stuff is terrible. This isn't even healthy. So then it's like, okay, well, let me learn more. Then you begin to, like, read about, like, cold cuts. And it's like, this isn't even real meat. Then it's like, okay, well, if I eat a turkey sandwich with junk turkey and junk bread, then I'm going to get some Sun Chips. Dude, Sun Chips are fried. They're called Sun Chips to make you think, right? So it's not, the point I'm making is not about, like, you know, conspiracies. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is junk food takes so many forms that it will always evolve and kind of slither into the next healthy thing. Meat substitutes, the meat alternatives. And I was big into that. And I'm eating Beyond the Beef and protein and, you know, veggie sausage. Well, you look at the back of the veggie sausage package and it's like, dude, I can't even say half of these ingredients. Like, half of these ingredients are soy, gluten, and junk, right? And again, I mean, I still, I'm not saying I never eat the stuff, but it's like, you have to be aware of what you're putting into your body. At the end of the day, I know I need protein in whatever form I take that. I know I need veggies, plant, right? So I know what I need. And so the idea is, you know, junk food is always going to slither to find a way into the next kind of hype way for you to be sold, when, to your point, you just need these key few things.
Yeah, like, awareness is power, right? Like, once you understand kind of the mechanism, it's like, I don't know, for me, I found it to be true that it's like a lot easier to make the right choice while you kind of understand the mechanism why, you know, some things work the way they are, and like, why this is bad, not just that it's bad, but like, why this is bad, or why is this the what your body needs. Maybe for someone it's different, but like, for me, the formula was like the understanding some of the mechanism, it has kind of, you know, made me a lot more thoughtful about, you know, let's say we are talking about nutrition. But now kind of segueing into I think you touched on at some point in the podcast about, you know, sharpening your saw, being the quote from, who was it, Abraham Lincoln? Or
right. Yeah.
That you would spend actually the most of your time sharpening your saw. So I'm curious, like, actually, because there's a lot of formulas to perfect mornings, and you have the course, which I guess we'll link to the in the description so people can check that out, definitely. But I guess it would be useful for people to hear, like, what's your formula for, like, your perfect morning? Because I also believe strongly that mornings are the most important time of the day, just because this is where you create momentum, and you can create the momentum the, you know, the positive way or the negative way. It's you know, it's all like a momentum game. So, you know, I'm curious, like, what specifically, you know, constitutes like a perfect morning for you?
Yeah, so the first thing I'll say, and I think that's a great segue from the diet, is, you know, it's easy, right? So it's simple, not easy, it's simple. So the same way that you need, there are key few ingredients you need for a healthy diet: protein, again, vegetables, a little bit of sugars, a little bit of fats. That's what you need. When it comes to starting your day, you need reflection, you need physical activity, you need introspective conversation with yourself, you need affirmation, and I'd say affirmation and time working on a craft. You need energy and momentum that I believe that you simulate and create yourself. And then you need to be able to focus on your health, your wealth, and ultimately what you want to achieve. And so, you know, I'm a guy, I like to work out, I like to, you know, like, you know, go to the gym. for some people, you know, your physical fitness and movement may be a yoga mat and 20 minutes in front of, you know, the mirror or the TV, right?
Or
and
a walk.
Fine.
Right.
Or a walk, right? So the idea isn't you've got to go work out like me. Like, no, that's my recipe, right? And so one of the key ingredients that I think it gets overlooked so much is understanding, you know, again, like we talked about from the beginning, like, what do you want to achieve financially? And that doesn't mean that, you know, the Lamborghini we keep talking about, you know, it could simply be, I want to own my home. I want to work as much as I want to work. I want to be able to go travel and spend time with, you know, family and whatever. So, you know, it's understanding what you want financially, but then having the courage to check on that on a day in and day out basis. So yes, check your bank account every single day, right? So understand that, you know, just like in learning other things, I can learn more about, I can raise my financial IQ. Well, then another piece I think that's very important is what I call recalibration, right? So you want to recalibrate to stimulate, you want to recalibrate to replicate. And so what I mean by recalibrate to replicate, you want to say to yourself, you know, in our conversation about going to go close a deal, you're nervous, it's maybe the biggest deal you've ever done before. Well, guess what? The last biggest deal you've ever done before, it was the first time you did that. So you can do this. So sometimes the key is going back into the chronicles and the archives and reminding yourself of how successful you are. So if you've never closed a $100,000 deal and the, you know, the biggest deal you closed to date was $70,000, well, go back and look at the emails that you know, that transpired back then. Go back and look at your notes. Go back and look at the documents you created. Look at the framework. Look at your mindset of where you were when you closed that deal. And what you're doing there is not necessarily duplicating it, but you're affirming to yourself that before you closed that $75,000 deal, the highest number you had was 50. So you have something special in you to get you from 50 to 75. So guess what? You also have something special in you to get you from 75 to 100. Well, that doesn't happen without recalibrating and resetting yourself and reminding yourself how special and how unique you are.
Okay. But I guess like the recalibration part and I think all those elements, like you said, of the morning, I think people get too fixated on like one specific way. You know, there's like, this person is talking like you got to do this breath work. This guy is telling you, you got to do this form of meditation. This guy is telling about like, you got to do this form of exercise. And I think the key there is, and that you touched on, is that, you know, you got to figure out your own formula. And the only way to do it is if you just try a bunch of different things. Like, you're just not afraid to, like, you know, try going for a walk, try waking up at 5 a.m., try waking up at 8 a.m., try waking up at 10 a.m., I don't know, you know, just try different things. Try doing, I don't know, Wim Hof breathing, or try to do meditation. Maybe meditation is not for you, then maybe just do something else. Like, I don't know, just journal, you know, in a notebook. I think probably you can, you know, confirm the same, that, you know, it probably wasn't like that for you, that you just, you know, immediately found the perfect morning formula. You were like, okay, this is what I want to do. And from then on, you stuck with it and it was perfect. Probably it was just like tweaks and, you know, changing things around, right?
Yeah. So what I'd say to that is, you know, youth sports here in the US, especially in Texas, are really big, right? So the same way that you put your kid in, you know, soccer, and it's like, okay, well, my kid likes to run. Maybe they aren't necessarily coordinated enough to have success kicking the ball, but they're fast. Then you take them from soccer and you put them in baseball. And it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, he has good hand-eye coordination. He enjoys playing in the outfield. Maybe not pitching, but I know my kid is fast. I know that he can catch. Then you say, okay, well, I'm going to take my kid and put him in basketball. Well, your kid's fast. He can catch. So he's really good on offense. Maybe not as much moving laterally on defense. Before you know it, your kid is a lacrosse player, right? So the whole idea is, if I can sample and try and fail and learn from failure, and again, like, understand that there are no periods in life or commas. And so before you know it, I've tried this breathing meditation, and I tried this breathing pattern, or I've tried transcendental meditation. It doesn't quite work for me. So you just try, you know, work on, you know, mental kind of focus work. Then, you know, from there you say, okay, well, I understand where my natural skills and gifts are. So now I can take this framework, you know, kind of like we talked about with Stoicism, and apply it to what I'm naturally good at. You know, Robin Sharma has this quote, and he says that things are ugly at the beginning and messy and confusing in the middle and beautiful at the end. And, you know, again, from the very first beginning of this show, we talked about that. So let's not focus on where we are trying to get to beautiful at the end. Let's take that first step. The first step is going to be messy. It's going to be confusing. You're not going to be great at it. But if you have the audacity to take that second step, you can reflect on the first, identify strengths and weaknesses, move forward. And if you can kind of begin to do that every single day, you really achieve mastery. And that's really what we're talking about here is, you know, it's not about being the best version of, you know, whatever you're trying to get to. It's trying to become a little bit better every single day to where now you're working in an area of competency in every single part of your life.
Mm. Yeah, that's perfectly summarized. I got nothing really to add there. I guess like my second to last question, which I carefully thought about just now, is because we didn't really summarize the sports, you know, comparison to real life. My question would be, given that you have a lot of background in sports and also coaching, but also in like entrepreneurial life and, you know, like something that's not sports. So you have like two words. So for example, taking an example of, let's say, Kobe Bryant, because I think I know you also were a big fan of his. What do you think is like the one big thing people like normal citizens that are like non-sport, they have no relation to sports, they can take away from someone like Kobe, who was like a, you know, big sports person and he had like a, you know, famous mentality in sports. What do you think is like the main kind of takeaway for the sports mentality from someone like Kobe into like a, you know, I would say everyday citizen life of, you know, work, job, family, friends, normal society?
Yeah. So what I'd say, you know, the good takeaway from Kobe, and I think Kobe was, his mental game was so strong, and, you know, there are physical limitations you have. And so like, I'm not a very strong typer, right? So I can maybe get a little bit better words per minute, right? But that's the physical skill set. Your physical skill sets have limitations. There's only, you know, so good you can get at this or so good you can get at that. But the mental side of the game is really where the average Joe can be great at anything. And so you take the example of the regular Joe who doesn't work out, he's not into athletics, and he's really, really, really focused on his family, right? So you can take the concept of mama mentality, which means, you know, focusing in and zoning out and giving everything you can to the point of, you know, almost exhaustion. You can take that framework, similar to Stoicism we talked about, and apply it to your life, right? So the idea that I'm going to give the very best I can, I'm going to be so in tune with my kids and understand that, you know, no matter what area of life that they need me, I can step in and be a resource. You don't have to be big, strong, competitive, rich. You know, these are all, you know, what I would call like physical, like those things come and go. There's only, you know, so rich that I, the idea that, you know, I'm not chasing Warren Buffett. I'm in my own race for what I want to achieve there. But when it comes to the intangibles, you know, you can control that because you're in a race with yourself. Kobe, you know, he chased Michael Jordan. I think some of that was like the media putting Michael Jordan at his back that he was chasing. Kobe was just chasing the best version of Kobe today.
So yeah, he was not comparing himself to other people, but who he was yesterday, just getting better every day, right?
Yeah.
I would say that the last thing I would ask is more of an open-ended, which is like, you know, what's like the last thing you would want like maybe the viewers to leave with? What are maybe some like last thoughts, last ideas, last, I don't know, something you still have in your mind and, you know, I haven't asked you and you still wanted to share?
Yeah. So the last thing I'd say is, we talked a lot about personal growth, personal development. We talked a little bit about community opportunities to serve and lead. I think that finding a really, really, really challenging problem and having the courage to work towards a solution, even if it's not your, you know, your work yourself, but finding something that's so far off that forces you to think, it forces you to learn, it forces you to press. I think that's one of the keys that, you know, the last thing you want in your growth to like self-realization is to actually realize, like, you don't, like, you, that's not what you want, right? So like, so for a person who may be like really into like pets and like saving like rescue dogs and stuff, right? So identifying a really big problem and saying like, here's this massive problem. There are, you know, roosters in Brazil that have like overtaken the population. I don't know, I'm just making that up, right? It's like, how do I solve this really, really, really big problem that I don't have the resources for? I've never been to Brazil, right? It keeps you curious and it keeps you working towards something greater than yourself. So even if some scientist in, you know, Puerto Rico figures out the answer, you're now in tune with something that's 5 or 10 times higher than even your comprehension or understanding, more than the resources you have, more than, you know, the physical ability you have to get to Brazil to make an impact. But, you know, finding an amazingly big challenge that you can kind of muse to reference, like, how do I fix this problem, or what role can I serve in fixing this problem, gives you such a long-term advantage as far as a goal that you can work to achieve, that maybe you'll have a chance to impact and make better, maybe you won't, but it keeps you sharp.
So what's your like amazingly big challenge that you are?
You know, I've got a couple. You know, the one that I share with you is, in the U.S., we have what we call historically Black colleges and universities. And so these are schools and colleges that were formed right after slavery for exclusively for Black people, right? So Black people could not go to like Harvard, like we couldn't go to Harvard. So we had to create like a smaller university down the road that was underserved. It wasn't as well furnished, right? Well, these colleges were the beginning of, you know, I'd say like my grandparents achieving higher education and higher learning. And then, and they were thriving, like I say, like my grandparents' time. They were sustaining during my parents' time. Those universities are in dire condition today, right? So there are some kids who can't afford Harvard. They may be Harvard intelligent, but they can't afford Harvard. So they have to go to, you know, Morehouse, Spelman, you know, or any of these other like really, I mean, prestigious, like really, really academically rigorous schools. But because there are fewer kids going, because there are fewer dollars going there, these schools are beginning to shut and close their doors. Mm. And like most things, like global warming, it's happening so slow that it doesn't set a red flag. But every couple of years, these major, like one of these major schools closes. So one of the big challenges or one of the big problems I'm looking at, and again, maybe I can solve it, maybe I can be a piece of a solution, but how do we keep these doors open, you know, for these major universities, because these kids need these schools? And so, you know, again, maybe I can play a role in it, maybe I can't, but, you know, that's a big, that's bigger than me. That's bigger than me, that's bigger than my kids, my family. You know, if I can be a part to figure that out, then I've done something good for the ecosystem.
That's a beautiful goal. So yeah, thank you so much, Cameron. It was a pleasure to talk with you. I think there's a lot of, you know, takeaways from this this episode for everybody, and I think each person can kind of probably, you know, be more I don't know, would be interested in different parts of our conversation and can have different kind of thoughts and maybe related experiences, but I think there will definitely be a lot of takeaways.
Yeah, Conrad, thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Business Banter Podcast. If your immediate reaction after listening to this episode is either, fuck, that was some great advice, can't wait for more, where do I sign up? Or, man, I had the same idea in mind, but I assumed it's just me being weird. Thank you for sharing. Or, this bastard hurt my feelings, offended my delicate soul, and should be banned from the internet. Then, it means we're on the right track, doing God's work. In that case, please like, subscribe, and do whatever is allowed by technology to support this show. Make sure to also bookmark the podcast page, business-banter.com. If you'd like to voice your opinion, ask a question, or just want to connect, shoot us an email at conrad@killercoldemail.com. Until next time, my friend, stay vigilant.